Just want to start with a few disclaimers. One of them is because some of the confusion that's been around. Everything I say today, I'm not even sure I speak for myself, but for one thing I am sure, I'm not speaking for anyone else, and none of the views that I will express today should be attributed to anyone else but myself and the organization for which I work. The other confusion is about what this debate is about, and the other disclaimer. This debate, at least as I see it, is not about whether the U.S. should engage Hamas. I've never advocated U.S. engagement with Hamas, in large part because it's a non-start. It's not going to happen for legal, political, and other reasons. But also because I think that whole debate reflects sort of twin mythologies that have grown in the last many years about the role of engagement or non-engagement. And one mythology is the flip side of the other. The first mythology is that non-engagement is the ultimate penalty we can inflict on our enemies. If we don't talk to Iran, we don't talk to Syria, we don't talk to others, somehow they're going to suffer so much that they're going to have to change their ways because they want engagement so much. Of course, the flip side of the notion that non-engagement is the ultimate penalty is that engagement is the ultimate prize, that somehow because the United States will talk to Syria or Iran or even Hamas, suddenly they're going to change their behavior. Of course not. Both of those are caricatures, and both of those should be dismissed. Engagement is a tool that sometimes one uses, doesn't use. There are different forms of engagement. Rob dismissed some forms of engagement as not being of the same type. For example, indirect discussions on a prisoner exchange. I don't know what we would call it if not engagement. It certainly is an indirect form of contact. Indirect contacts on the notion of a ceasefire, which Secretary Rice apparently has encouraged in her latest trip to the region. Those are different tools, different ways of looking at it. It's simply a way of acknowledging that there's an actor in the field that has a role to play, and we have to think concretely about what's the best way to deal with it. So it's not a black and white issue, and I certainly, as I've said, have never advocated engagement by the U.S. as the State Department blog put the question at that level. I think we have to be modest about this question. There's no, and I think Rob stated it at the outset, there are no good answers. It's a very difficult issue, and what I'm advocating is a broader debate that asks one simple question: what works, what doesn't work, and at what price? Is the current strategy working? Are there alternatives that might have a better chance of working and that don't compromise our principles too much, principles of other countries as well? I think we need that kind of debate because the one thing I do know, and on this I disagree with Rob, is that the current strategy has not worked by any measure, I would submit, certainly by my own measure, but even by the measure of those who have implemented this policy and who are defending it in terms of certain goals they want to achieve. And let's just look at some of those goals. One of the purported goals of the policy is to make Hamas change its views about Israel and to accept the three quartet conditions. Evidently, that hasn't worked. Hamas has not accepted them, and I think Rob obviously would agree with me on that. Another purported goal is to turn the people of Gaza against Hamas so that Hamas will be overthrown. Now, we did just issue this report based on months of fieldwork in Gaza. Yes, I think it's clear that the people of Gaza are disenchanted, angry. The polls may be changing recently because of the flare-up of attacks between Hamas and Israel. But there's a anger at Hamas, which certainly would diminish its support, I believe, if they were new elections. But turning it against Hamas in an operational way that would lead Hamas to be ousted from Gaza? If anything, Hamas has entrenched its position in Gaza as a result of the sanctions, the isolation. As we know, when sanctions are imposed, those who are ruled suffer most, and they become more dependent on those who are the rulers. And again, I would recommend you read the report because we document both the loss of Hamas popularity and the strengthening of its position in Gaza, precisely as a result of the economic and political steps that have been taken to try to isolate Gaza and to try to undermine Hamas. So it has not reached that goal or even brought us any closer to that goal. Undermine political support for Hamas and strengthen political support for Fatah. As I said, there's an argument that Hamas's support has decreased, and that's a normal thing given that they've not been able to deliver. Again, the recent polls show that as violence flares up, Hamas's popularity grows, I'm not a big believer in polls, but this is a poll by Khalil Shikaki, who historically has not been known to exaggerate Hamas's popularity. In the latest poll, Haniyeh would edge out Abbas in a presidential election, and certainly Hamas seems to be gaining, because Palestinians, when they see violence, they tend to turn to those who seem to be standing up most with greater effectiveness. And I don't think that there's any evidence that Fatah, even if Hamas has lost support, that Fatah has gained what Hamas has lost. So on that ground, on that level too, on that measure too, there's no indication that the policy is working. Reducing violence and stopping the rocket launches from Gaza into Israel. I don't even think we need to spend more than a few seconds on that. Clearly that has not worked either. Promoting the peace process, the notion that by separating Hamas and Fatah, isolating Hamas, we're going to give a boost to the peace process, the lines would be more clearly drawn between the good guys and the bad guys. That's a nice argument in theory, it just doesn't work in practice. You can't have, and I think the last few months have shown this quite vividly, Israel can't make peace with one half of the Palestinians and be at war with the other half, and the Palestinians can't be engaged in peace negotiations with the Israelis while they engage in a civil war with other Palestinians. Those two things, we may wish that they could be so, it just is not possible. Hamas has more than one instrument in its toolkit to try to derail the talks, and it will have every incentive to do so under the current paradigm. And if there's violence, we saw Abbas compelled, rightly or wrongly, or being felt compelled that he had to stop the talks, because how could he be embracing Olmert as their images on Al Jazeera showing Gazans, young Gazans, kids being killed. And likewise, I suspect at some point, despite the quite remarkable fact that the Israelis have continued the negotiations despite recent terrorist attacks, that the Israelis at some point too will say, who are we really talking to? We're talking to somebody who doesn't control his territory, who doesn't speak for his people as an entirety, and who can't stop the one thing that we really want him to stop, which is the violence against our citizens. So, as I say, judged simply from a pragmatic point of view, and I'm not yet advocating an alternative, but let's just look at what this 2.5-year policy has produced. I'm not pleased by the fact that we've stuck to this policy for 2.5 years. I find it quite astonishing, although not surprising, that a policy that has failed and whose failure was quite evident to a number of us from the beginning has been pursued and continually pursued, even though it's not meeting the goals that it has set for itself. So I don't see how continuing it will yield any different results. Rob, I'm not sure that he was referring to me when he said that that some people adopt sort of a serpentine view of politics, but I think this is a somehow version of history, that somehow, if we continue putting pressure on Hamas, the people of Gaza are going to rise against them. Somehow, if we continue doing what we're doing, the situation in the West Bank is going to improve, which it hasn't, and for good or bad reason, we could discuss that, but it just hasn't improved over the last several months, and that somehow the political dynamics are going to change. It's a nice theory, but the somehows simply haven't happened. So we need a logical theory, a pragmatic theory, the one that tries to take into account why the current strategy is not working, and then let's have an honest debate about what a different strategy might be. There are different potential strategies. One is a military option. I think there's good reason a full-scale military invasion of Gaza. I think there's good reason why Israel has not done it yet. It may at some point feel compelled to do so, but we know the drawbacks. What's the exit strategy? How does Israel get out? Again, you hear the notion, well, Israel might invade Gaza, then turn it over to the UN, there'll be a trusteeship, and suddenly it would fall back into Abbas's lap. I think that's risible. It will not happen. The UN, I don't know who will take it over from the Israelis, and I don't know under what conditions Abbas would then take it over. So that option seems to me there may be greater military, more targeted military options. Those are all possible. What they don't do is address the fundamental issues I raised. They don't stop the rocket launches, certainly not. On the contrary, I would argue. They don't empower Abbas in any way, because on the contrary, the more that violence continues, the weaker his position in negotiating with Israel. They don't address the question of Abbas's weakened legitimacy as the president of the Palestinian Authority and chairman of the PLO. He may be our preferred Palestinian leader, but he is one who's suffering a legitimacy deficit right now. And so the notion that he could negotiate a tough agreement, sell a tough agreement, and implement a tough agreement under those conditions, under these conditions, seems to me to be an illusion. So is there an alternative that will come closer to achieving these goals, stopping the violence, which, as I say, I think is a prerequisite for doing anything positive in the West Bank, not on the peace process, but not only on the peace process, simply improving life on the West Bank? Is there an alternative that stops the violence, that allows the peace process to go forward, but that doesn't do this at a cost of weakening and discrediting President Abbas? And here I want to come to the dichotomy that Rob drew between the two arguments in favor of a different approach, which I won't necessarily call engaging, but a different approach towards Hamas. One argument, as I recall, is it's the best way to empower Abbas. That's a serpentine version. It's the best way to empower Abbas. It's the only way that he could actually emerge as a leader who can negotiate with Israel. The other version is Hamas is a strong reality on the ground. They're the influential, relevant party, so we have to deal with them. I don't see that you could exclude either one of those. It's because Hamas is a real actor on the ground, like it or not, that we have to deal with it. Others have to deal with it one way or the other. But it's because dealing with Hamas does have a cost, and we all have to recognize it, that dealing with Hamas, for example, reaching a ceasefire, has a real cost for Abbas. I mean, put yourself in the shoes of a Palestinian. Hamas has been launching rockets at Israel. What it gets is a ceasefire. Abbas has been trying to make peace with the Israelis. What he gets is continued occupation, IDF incursions, et cetera, et cetera. So that's a dichotomy that doesn't really play in his favor. So I think, as I say, it's precisely because Hamas is a reality that we have to deal with it, and it's precisely because dealing with it poses a risk for Abbas that we have to think of ways of doing it that don't imperil his position. That's a challenge. It's a challenge of trying to meet these collective goals and doing it in a way that doesn't betray fundamental principles that we want to pursue. I think that there are two models, perhaps three models under this scenario. One is the limited ceasefire. By limited ceasefire, I mean we're just dealing with ceasefire between Hamas and Israel. It's what the Egyptians are talking about now. In order for it to be sellable, two things need to be added to simply stopping the violence. One is trying to stop the smuggling of rockets into Gaza, because that is a core Israeli concern. And if the rocket smuggling is not stopped, I could understand from an Israeli perspective that this really does look like a bad deal. And so that has to be done, and there are some security experts who are trying to figure out a way to control the tunnels, which is not an easy task, but has to be addressed. The other thing, from Hamas's perspective, is they won't accept a ceasefire in which Israel stops shooting, they stop shooting, but the closures remain and Hamas can't govern, and the people of Gaza won't be able to live more normal lives. So in addition to the anti-smuggling measures, there have to be measures that will open up the crossings to some extent. As I said, that presents certain advantages. If it works, you could at least decrease the level of violence. You could avoid a humanitarian disaster in Gaza, which I think should nonetheless be something that we think about. And to some extent, because the violence has been reduced, Abbas has greater ability to negotiate with Israel. But there's that downside that I mentioned earlier. Abbas, in that situation, really looks like the impotent leader. He has not achieved anything in the West Bank, and meanwhile Hamas is reaping the fruits of its more belligerent, violent attitude. Which is why some of us have argued, and as I've argued, the debate may only be open now, but I think a number of us, including some people much better known than I am, have been arguing for a different approach from the outset, from the time that Hamas was elected. But that's why I, along with others, have argued that the optimal way of doing this, and it's not patronizing, I think it really is trying to analyze the political situation, the optimal way of doing this is to give Abbas a key role in achieving the ceasefire, in being able to bring to the people of Gaza whatever benefits need to be brought. But that does require reconciliation, talks, some form of new arrangements, power-sharing arrangements between Hamas and Fatah, because otherwise Hamas will not agree. And the optimal scenario, once you have that kind of reconciliation, which should be a better type of reconciliation than Mecca, which really was a patchwork that left more questions unanswered than answered. It should be more clear about what the security forces would look like. It should be more clear about what the platform of whatever national unity government or new arrangement emerges in terms of their acceptance of the Arab Peace Initiative, which I think is one way to coax and force Hamas to take a position that's closer to the quartet requirements. And it should be clear about the fact that it gives a mandate to Abbas to negotiate a political deal with Israel, and that that deal would go through to referendum if it is reached, and that Hamas would have to commit to abiding by the results of that referendum. Under those conditions, as I say, number one, Abbas is the one who's negotiating the ceasefire between Hamas and Israel, and he's the one who takes the credit if, in fact, it's achieved. Abbas is the one who negotiates with a mandate from Hamas a political deal with Israel, not as head of the government or as PA president, but as chairman of the PLO. And once that agreement is reached, he puts it to a referendum, and with Saudi and Jordanian and Egyptian guarantees that at least they would hold Hamas to its commitment. It seems to me that that is a route to be explored. It has to be, as I said, it has to be done in a wiser and tougher way than the Mecca agreement, which I think left both Fatah and Hamas off the hook. Neither one of them really had to commit to anything particularly binding, and hence the hence its rapid breakdown. This, as I say, I think this is a debate. It's a debate worth having, at least, because when the policy that we've been pursuing now for 2.5 years is yielding opposite results, I would submit, from the ones that had been predicted from the outset, at least it should be a call to revisiting our assumptions and to try to look more closely at what alternatives might be. Another alternative might be trying to bring Syria into the picture, but we could talk. I'm sure we could talk about that at some other session. But again, the core test of any policy, I believe, is whether it's working or not, whether it's achieving the goals that we've set out for our U.S. security, for the peace process, for Israel's security, for the well-being of the Palestinians. Is it moving us any closer to those goals? And I think it's quite clear that it's doing precisely the opposite. Now, Rob mentioned some Israelis who had who took the view that the only way of dealing with Hamas is to kill them. I'm sure there is that point of view in Israel. But if we want to have a battle of the quotes and the battle of the hardliners and the softliners in Israel, the picture is much more diverse, as people here well know. There are some quote-unquote doves in Israel who believe that a different approach towards Hamas makes more sense. For those of you who might have heard former Foreign Minister Shlomo Ben-Ami, he made a very forceful case. In fact, went further than I'm going now in talking for direct talks between the U.S. and Hamas, and direct talks at the highest level between Israel and Hamas. That's a view that people like Yossi Beilon also have argued for. Now, mind you, the left wing in Israel came to this with those among the left who came to this with great difficulty, because their whole life story is caught up in the fact that the people they dealt with, Mahmoud Abbas, Abu Ala, etc., are people who they don't want to betray. So this was not something that they did willingly. These are doves who want to talk to anyone. It took them a long time. In fact, it took them much longer than some of the hardline, the hawks in Israel. Ephraim Halevi, former head of the Mossad, Gura Island, former head of the National Security Council. Shaul Mufaz, former defense minister, has also said things that point in that direction. None of them can be, I don't think, suspected of simply willing to trade away Israel's security or Israel's principles. But they're confronting a real problem about the reality of Hamas, the failure of the policy so far, and the need at long last to think of an alternative. Some of the alternatives may be ones we agree with. Some of them may be ones we disagree with. But there are alternatives that don't keep your head in the sand and say, somehow, what hasn't worked for the past 2.5 years will work in the future. Thank you.